With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
What's up, baseball family? The intro dance party, you know, just gets a little out of hand sometimes, and then we get a little distractificated.
Well, I feel like that intro has a very abrupt ending.
This time.
yeah, today it did. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Anyway, baseball family, we're really excited to see you here. We hope you're having such a wonderful time. And at the beginning of the show, we like to tell you how awesome you are. And we'd like to thank you for being here with us. It is playoff baseball time. We absolutely love it. But it is very, very special time of year because tomorrow begins the World Series. Oh, man, it's so exciting.
I can't wait. Especially Brig, because it's happening. Games 3, 4, and 5, if necessary, are down the street from my house.
Yeah, you right. You absolutely yeah. right.
Show enough. But so I'm not going to a game. I'm gonna settle for a t-shirt this time.
Yeah, t-shirts are good. Yeah. I think that makes a whole heap of sense to me. Baseball family, before we get started, we want to give you a quick rundown on ways you can support the show. The first thing I wanted to bring to your attention is how big a deal it is when you hit the like and the subscribe button, especially on YouTube. That goes a lot further than you think. So take a minute, jump over there, hit the like and subscribe button on whatever platform you're on. But particularly if you're on YouTube, that is a big, huge help. All right, and we'll tell you more in a minute. But first, let's recap the Games 7. Yes, that's how you say that. The Games 7 of
the Championship seven? Series. Not mm-hmm. Game 7s? Because I always assumed that Game 7 was a singular event. So it'd be Game 7s.
Really? Oh, we should look this up. Is it Game 7?
We'll do it. We'll do it after.
Game 7s. Baseball family, if you have an opinion, I need you to let us know in the commentary section. Peanut Gallery, go. Okay, let's jump into the ALCS. The ALCS was interesting for a number of reasons, but the chief bullet point for me was just how dramatically the Rangers walloped the Astros in that Game 7. I think that an 11-4 score is just one of those things that's undeniable. It almost doesn't matter how well or poorly either team played. With a score like that, it's hard to refute.
Right. Well, and the other thing too is that it's not like they built up on those 11 runs over. I mean, yeah, they it took them a lot of the game, but yeah. The vast majority of that came early.
Right.
Like they were scoring early and often, and they put this game away 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah.
So
that's how it felt.
That's the thing that blew my mind with it.
Yeah. It felt like, what are we even still doing here? And I know baseball is one of those sports where you can have a lot of wild and zany things occur, but for whatever reason, that game just felt all of the way just done early. Just like yeah. you said.
Well, so the Rangers jumped up to a 3-0 lead in the first inning. And I was actually at my son's football practice. It was yeah. his last one. So we were doing parents versus kids. And that was a ton of fun. But yeah. I was checking my phone periodically to see what was going on. And I was like, oh, 3-0. That's not much of a lead against the Astros. but mm-hmm. it could get the job done in this 3-1. I was like, okay, we got ourselves a ball game. Yeah. But then by the time we were done, it was what? It was 8-2. And I was like,
yeah. Yeah.
This game's over.
didn't you text me like, I texted you. I'm like, are you watching this? And you're like, no, I can't right now. I'm like, okay, well, because yeah. I couldn't make sense of it. I was like, I don't know what is happening, because, you know, Evan Carter, Adolis Garcia, they just were killing it. And Adolis Garcia, ALCS MVP easy, but especially mm-hmm. in that game, it just felt like he just icing on the cake for the series that guy's had.
Yeah. You know, maybe the biggest mistake the Astros made was waking up his bat, even though I guess it had been awake the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there was only one game in the series where he didn't get a hit.
Right.
So,
yeah, he was 11-2 in postseason games this year so far, with 7 home runs, and 5 of them came against the Astros in the championship series. So put that in your organ and pound it.
I don't know. That's so he hit safely in 11 of 12 games, Briggs. I think what you were trying to say there.
Anyway, yeah, 11 of 12.
Yeah, he was the man for the Rangers yeah. In the ALCS. Far and away, definitely deserved the ALCS MVP. And despite everything, I guess the Rangers or the Astros probably did try to take him out of the game. And maybe they did throw at him, right? Maybe they're trying to get him suspended instead of Abreu. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway. But either way, it didn't work out well. The NLCS was equally interesting. It was a much tighter game score-wise. But as I was watching it, I left feeling that Philly got outplayed, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. That was not just pitching, but fielding. I felt was crisp. I felt it was urgent. I felt it was they had as many opportunities and took advantage of them and made the plays that were necessary, which sounds heavily sort of reductionist, but it's not, because that's how it goes. Some days you just show up and some days you don't. And this day, right. The Arizona Diamondbacks were all over the field. They were killing it.
So the thing that's crazy, though, is that, like, I'm going to go back and look at this real quick just to make sure. But I feel like the Phillies had, okay, they didn't in game 7, they didn't have an error. But a lot of the games in the series, they had 1 or 2 errors.
Yeah.
In the field. And the Diamondbacks, I was going through kind of recapping, and we'll get there in a bit. But the Diamondbacks are legitimately, like, the best defensive team in the league.
Yes.
Across Major League Baseball.
Errors. Yeah. Yes.
And that ended up being a significant difference maker in this series, where you've got one team that's all offense and some pretty darn good pitching. I'll give them that.
For sure.
But then you've got a team that where the pitchers can trust the defense. And then you get that offense, you get the offense moving. And the thing that blew my mind, like big time break, is that JT Realmuto and the pitching staff could not stop the Diamondbacks from running once they started.
That's right. Oh man.
Once they got moving, that was it, dude.
And that Gabriel Moreno single was in, like, in the 5th with Corbin Carroll dancing off second base
mm-hmm.
It was just a regular old run of the mill single, but Corbin Carroll's speed and the jump he got on top of the lead he took, which was so liberal off second base.
Well, the fact that he was around, but he got onto second base because he stole exactly. second base, right?
You're right.
So
you're
you
right.
get that thing moving, and then you get guys who have confidence in running the bases. And like you said, a pretty liberal lead at second base because nobody's paying any attention to you.
Yeah. Carroll has stolen 4. So he has 4 stolen bases this postseason all by himself. Marte has 2. And even Alec Thomas has a stolen base.
Alec Thomas is the fastest person I've ever seen, I think.
Dude, so, but what I'm saying is you don't think of, like, he's not the name that keeps getting tossed around.
Right, because Corbin Carroll's so fast.
Right, right. The whole lineup, though, is stealing bases. And when we get to the Rangers, I'll tell you why that's interesting. But let's not put the cart before the horse. But Ketel Marte ended up being the NLCS MVP. Again, has safely hit in 12 games so far of the postseason. That's a 16.
All 12.
Yeah, all 12. Right. That's a 16-game hit streak in the postseason. Has yet to play a postseason game in the history of his life where he has not earned a hit, that he's not gotten a hit in a postseason game. What?
It's like, crazy, because he's just kind of been hanging out in Arizona. I think a lot of people forgot about him.
Yeah,
you know, a little bit. I don't want to say in obscurity, but he hasn't been this guy for the last couple of years because he hasn't been healthy. But now it's like, okay, like, are we maybe seeing? I mean, this is certainly the Marte that Seattle fans were hoping was going to show up, right? This is this is the guy that Seattle fans were like, oh, we traded this dude, and now it's like, MVP candidate next year, question mark.
Well, if he keeps up the performance. Yeah, exactly. Then remember that year he was the only Diamondback at the All-Star game, and we were all like, whoa. Like, the whole world was like, who's that guy, right?
Yeah.
This is that guy.
Yep, it is.
So let's get into World Series preview. We're going to talk about these things as we go. We're going to weave in some context and not just going to number dump on you. But basically, we want to remind you of some of the things that brought the teams to where they are now. And then we'll throw some tidbits in there for you as well. So the Arizona Diamondbacks, first thing you should know about them is they have been dubbed the Answerbacks. So you can feel cool if you're talking to your other baseball team or your other baseball fans. They're Arizona Answerbacks. They do just that. They answer back. Their National League regular season record was 84-78. That's tied for the worst record in playoff in this year's playoffs with the Marlins. Yeah, this year's playoffs. They finished second in the NL West. And in offensive categories during the regular season, they were 22nd overall in home runs with 166. Stolen bases, they flipped to the other side, had 166. That's number two overall in Major League Baseball for the regular season. Dead in the middle on earning walks. When it comes to striking out at the plate, they were fourth in Major League Baseball.
Fourth fewest.
Oh, so for
not a team that strikes out. Not a team
good.
That strikes
I
out.
I was
off.
Like, this does not, as I read that stat, I was like, that doesn't make sense. My eyes saw something different. Yes, they strike out the least, the fewest, the not as muchest.
Yes, there you go.
Batting average tied for 13th, middle of the road. OPS 17th, middle of the road. But then you've got your small ball category. Take us through these, because these are the really good ones.
So This is what's crazy to me is that, so first off, when you go to sac flies, they had 50 of them this year. That puts them fourth most in Major League Baseball this year. I love sac flies, productive outs. Obviously, you'd rather either have a home run or have a guy on base, but if it comes down to it, sac fly, perfectly, there's nothing wrong with it. But this is the one that gets me right here. So you've got this team that was 22nd in Major League Baseball in home runs, but they're first. They had 36 sac bunts this year. They are first. This is a small ball team playing, which is interesting because they're playing in the desert. You'd think the ball would fly, but they play with the dome closed all the time, pretty much, especially during the summer. And so the ball doesn't fly. So they can't count on it going out. They've got to find other ways to manufacture runs, and they're doing sac bunts, and they're stealing bases. That batting average of 250 is good enough for them. They're drawing some walks, but the big thing is they're not striking out, right?
Right.
Sac flies, sac bunts, things like that. They're productive at the plate. They're putting the ball in play, and it's really beneficial for them. Pitching and defense, I thought this was really interesting to go through. Their team ERA, they're 20th in Major League Baseball, 17th in home runs allowed, 16th in walks. They're not giving up a bunch of walks. But their pitchers are also not striking guys out because, like I said, the pitchers can trust the defense. 56 errors committed this season. That's first in Major League Baseball. And then they're tied for first in fielding percentage at 990. So behind the pitchers, like I said, they can trust those guys big time. They can, they can throw strikes, let guys put it in play, and they're going to make it happen. They're going to get outs for them.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I love those small ball details. I love them so much. Okay, I was looking this up while you were talking. And so I apologize for a little bit of digression here, but I wanted to know where they land on payroll. in the league because they have smaller market, smaller baseball, smaller style of baseball.
I want to say they're what, off the top of my head, they're 22nd?
21st.
21st. And
21 out of 30. They have their payroll right now is $116 million and change. It's like $116.4 million.
And their highest paid player this year got DFA'd.
Yeah. Yeah. Mad Bum is still getting paid for nothing. Yeah. It's amazing. Yep.
For someone watching baseball on TV.
Yeah. did you get into pitching? Because I was looking that up and didn't.
I did. Yep, I did pitching. Okay, let's talk about how they got here. How they got to the World Series. They swept the Brewers in the wild card round, a two-game sweep. That's what you want to call it. Division Series pounded the Dodgers, three-game sweep. And then in the league championship, like we talked about, they beat the Phillies 4-3. And it's crazy that these teams both played 12 games to get here in an identical path.
It's bananas. I love that. I love that they're lower seed teams. I love that they're underdogs. I love that it's the first time in forever. You know, it's the Rangers have never even won a World Series. Like, this is their first chance to win a World Series. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's their chance to win their first. Yeah, because they were in the World Series, what was it, about a decade ago?
Yeah. I worded that poorly. You're right. It's not their first chance to win one. It's their first chance.
Their chance to win their first.
Thank you. It's been a whole day. It's been a whole day, everybody. Just leave me alone. Okay. Let's talk about some impact players to watch going in for the Diamondbacks. We've got some defensive guys to pay attention to, offensive stuff, and some pitching. The first thing is, I think Ketel Marte, like we talked about, is easily one of the most high-impact players on the team. Here's some statistics. His batting average is .358, which in today's game is astronomical, right? And you can complain all you want about batting average, but let's back it up. His on-base percentage, .382, slugging, .604, and his OPS is a team-leading .986. Now, baseball family, these are just postseason numbers. I didn't factor in any of the regular season. This just, all of these numbers start with Milwaukee, the games in Milwaukee. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's only hit two home runs, but he's brought in seven RBIs with that .358 batting average. He's stolen two bases, worked two walks, and struck out 16 times. Then there's Corbin Carroll, who's a super duh. He leads the team in his on-base percentage at .396, which is great because he also leads the team in stolen bases at .400, and he works his walks. He leads the team with 7.
That's good. I was going to say with Marte, the only concern I would say is those 16 strikeouts.
Yeah.
Because you can't say that he's one of those three true outcome guys because – he is still getting on base. He's not hitting a bunch of home runs, right?
Yeah,
he's driving in runs as well. But those 16 strikeouts are kind of problematic when it comes to having guys on base.
Yeah, they are. Gabby Moreno, let's move down to Moreno. He's the catcher. His average, .279, OBP, .340, slugging, .512, and OPS is .352, which is fine. But somehow he's also in the .9 category. He has 9 RBIs, and he has not stolen a base because you don't want your catcher stealing bases. We've lost Brad. I don't know where he went, but he'll be right back, I'm sure. So you don't want your catchers necessarily trying to steal a base, so that's not a threat. But he does work a walk, and his problem is also the 12 strikeouts. But he has a better chance of hitting a home run as of this postseason than does Ketel Marte, which I think is pretty interesting. Sticking with Arizona really quick, I'm going to walk you through some of the pitchers that you should look out for and why, and then we'll move over to Texas and talk about the Rangers. So Zach Gallen, obviously starting pitcher, he's their go-to guy, he's their ace. 22 and a third innings pitched through just through the postseason. He's given up 24 hits, but in his ERA is the highest on starting pitching. Is at a 5.24. He's got a 5.24 ERA. He also is he's given up 9 walks, which is highest on the team. He has 13 strikeouts, and with hitters in position, His whip is 1.48. So Zach Gallen, we really like Zach, and we think he's a tremendous pitcher, but he has some holes that if you're not careful, he'll eat the. Hi, Brad. There he is.
Hi, I'm back. Yeah.
Hi. Thanks for letting me. Thanks for interrupting what I was. Couldn't say. I had another word problem.
This is the thing about Zach Gallen is that he was really great during the regular season, but he has not been great during the postseason. But no. The nice thing is that Brandon Pfaadt has been great in his place.
Brandon Pfaadt, over the postseason, 16 and two-thirds innings pitched. He's only given up 15 hits, so it's 10 fewer. Now, you can account that for the fewer number of innings, but if you look at his ERA, this is where it really gets interesting because he has a 2.7 ERA, which is half or so of what Gallen has had for this postseason. And his strikeout numbers, her strikeout numbers are
big.
The walks. Oh yeah, he's only given up 3 walks this whole time. Thank you for that.
Walks and kill, man.
He has struck out 22 batters he's faced. Just by comparison, Gallen. 5.24 ERA, 9 walks, 13 Ks. Flip that around with Pfaadt, who's a rookie, by the way. Have we mentioned that he's a rookie?
Well, he was up and down from between Phoenix and Reno a lot this year, too. That at one point, I think his ERA was like 7.
It was.
You know, and he was like 1-6. But then he figured something out.
Yeah, he did. 22 strikeouts, only 3 walks. His whip is 1.08. Then you've got a bunch of stuff. I'm going to skip all the stuff with the relief pitchers, but I do want to talk about Seawald and Please Ginkle do. Really quick because Seawald and Ginkle are the 1-2 punch at the end of the game, and they're going to shut the door on everybody. Ginkle, 9 innings pitched. Seawald, 8. let's get into their ERAs because this is really impressive.
Donuts.
Their earned run average combined is 0 this postseason. Both of them have a 0 earned run average. They've only given up 3 walks between them. They have collectively struck out 24 batters.
It's crazy. You're playing 7 inning games at that point.
That's it. That's all. It's literally lights out. Anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, baseball family, really quick, we wanted to let you know that we are on Patreon. If you're not yet aware of that, a quick reminder. That is one of the best ways to support the show. If you haven't already liked and subscribed and you want to do more, if you have already liked and subscribed, what is happening to me tonight? Then you want to do more. You go to Patreon and you find out that for as little as $1 a month or as much as $500 a month, there is a bunch of stuff that we will provide for you that is extra far and above and super exciting. Go to patreon.com/ whatever it is. Just search for Baseball Together because I don't think it works that way.
There's a link in the description.
And there's a link in the description.
Always.
Brad's going to talk about the Rangers while I catch my breath.
All right, let me tell you about the Rangers. So the Rangers finished the season 90-72. They lost the division title the last day of the season. They finished second, but it's kind of where it turns out it's worked out for them, right?
Yeah.
All the controversy with the bye round and everything like that. They took advantage, and here they are in the World Series. So let's talk about their offense. The Rangers have an absolutely dynamite offense. 4th in Major League Baseball in home runs. This is one thing they don't do, though, because they don't really have to. If you're hitting the ball with a fence, you don't have to move guys around. So they're not stealing bases. They're 27th in Major League Baseball in stolen bases. They are 3rd in walks. Very patient team at the plate. 14th in strikeouts. That's 14th fewest with strikeouts. Right in the
middle. Yeah.
263 batting average, that puts them 2nd. And then with a 790 OPS, that's 3rd in Major League Baseball. So we talked about small ball with the D-backs. The Rangers are not a small ball team, obviously. 22nd in the league in sack bunts, they don't do that. They don't have to, right? But because they have so much power on that team, they get a bunch of sack flies. They're 6th in Major League Baseball in sack flies. So if they have a runner on 2nd or 3rd, you can pretty much count on that guy. If there's 1 or 0 or 1 outs, you can count on that guy getting moved over because they're going to hit a deep fly ball.
Yeah.
Pitching. The Rangers had some issues with pitching early in the season, and I was convinced this was going to be their downfall, Brig.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
And it it was pretty close to being their downfall. Team ERA 4.28. That's 18th in Major League Baseball. Home runs allowed 198. That's 18th in Major League Baseball, which is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not as bad as it sounds.
Yeah. They walk a lot of guys, 491 walks. They don't strike out a lot of guys, 1,351. That's 23rd in Major League Baseball. But they don't commit any errors either, because the D-backs were 156 and the Rangers are number 2 with 57.
That's right.
And I said the D-backs were tied at a 990 fielding percentage. They're tied with the Rangers. So yeah. We're going to get a defensive battle here.
Yeah.
It's pretty much how this is going to go. Brig, why don't you tell them about how they got here? I'm going to look up, because I forgot to look up how these two teams went head-to-head this season.
Okay, and then I'll tell you the payroll. I'll tell you the payroll. How they got here, they entered the wild card round and defeated the Rays in a two-game sweep, Brad.
Two-game sweep.
That's a streak in this house, okay? Two-game streak. The division series, continued their streak, extending it to 5. They defeated the Orioles 3-0. And then in the championship series, they defeated the Astros 4-3, which we've just gone over. Let me pull up their number 9 in payroll. They sit at $195.8 million total in payroll. It's interesting. It's not like the most interesting thing.
Well, but it does show you how much of that is sitting on the IL, though.
Right. I don't know. I don't have that data. That's a great question, because that is a super relevant. Like, DeGrom is one of those that's a big money guy on the IL. So yeah, it would be interesting to see what they're playing with average annual value on the field during the playoffs.
There is still a lot there, because you got Seager and Semien. You got a bunch of money tied up in your middle infield.
Wasn't it like a $600 million total over the course of
something like that, contract
together or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So, okay, get this, Greg. These two teams played each other 4 times this year because of balanced schedule. Everybody's playing each other.
Yeah.
The D-backs won the season series 3-1. Whoa. Outscored the Rangers 26-19.
Whoa. When? What point in the season?
You would ask that, wouldn't you?
I would. Because it's relevant.
It is relevant for both these teams. Yeah. So first they played in May. First they split a series in Texas in May.
Okay, 2 games. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they played in the middle of August when, mind you, the D-backs, I guess they had kind of started to figure things out again.
But Texas was hurting.
Right, and the D-backs won both of those games in Arizona.
Mm. Okay. Let's talk about people to look out for if you're wanting to know who to root for on the Rangers squad. I vote for Corey Seager. His postseason numbers, get this, he leads the team in batting average at .333. His on-base percentage is a team leading .483. Slugging a .644, and then his OPS leads the team as well at 1.127. Brad,
I feel like every time I turned around, that dude was hitting a double.
Seriously. His offensive production is just insane. And he's worth all of the money and all of the whatever else they needed him. 3 home runs. So he's more of an extra base hit guy than 6 RBIs. There's more evidence of that there. He does not steal bases. Has not yet in the postseason.
I think that's a business decision too.
I think so too.
But and also he's starting out on second base, so he doesn't need to.
Exactly. He's also worked 12 walks. He's only struck out 7 times. Those are, again, just postseason numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just postseason numbers. Adolis Garcia is really fun to talk about. .327 batting average, just right behind Seager. .352 OBP, slugging at .750. That leads the team this postseason. His OPS is 1.102, which is just a handful of points behind Seager. He, though, has 7 home runs and a whopping team postseason leading 20 runs batted in. one stolen base, which I think is a miracle, and then 20 or zero walks. Nobody, he doesn't ever go free.
He's a free swinger, man.
He strikes out. He has 16 strikeouts.
Well, I was going to say, of course, he's leading the team with 20 RBIs because seven of those are him.
Yeah, exactly.
You take that away, I think he'd still be leading the team.
Well, let's just go down the list. Corey Seager, 6 RBIs this postseason. Young, 8. Carter, 5. Lowe, 6. Yeah, he still would be leading, at least of the guys that I chose to highlight. He would be leading the team this postseason. So those are just a couple of things. I think it's going to be interesting for the D-backs to attack this team in terms of strikeouts, because if you look at it this way, Seager has the fewest strikeouts on this list at 7, but Garcia 16 Ks, Young 15 Ks, Carter 11 Ks, and Lowe 20 strikeouts by himself.
So this is, I think, something that they're probably going to do is they're going to try to take Seager out of the series offensively, what they did with Schwarber and Harper game 6 and 7. Just don't pitch around to him. Yeah, you can pitch to the dude. Don't put him on, but make him chase. Don't pitch. Don't throw him strikes.
Yep.
I think that's what they're going to do with Seager.
I think so too. That's what I would do.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I would go after these other guys and make them.
Oh yeah.
Force them to challenge. You know,
I might kind of pitch around Garcia if there's somebody on. But if there's nobody on, let him hit a solo home run if that's what he does.
That's fine.
But yeah, no.
Bend, don't break. Yeah. The pitching, really quick, for Texas is really interesting. Nate Eovaldi, 26 innings pitched this postseason already. He Lights and Montgomery. Montgomery's had 25 innings pitched this postseason. They've each given up 21 and 28 hits, respectively. 2 home runs each. That is all. 7 earned runs for Eovaldi, 6 earned runs for Montgomery. Eovaldi's ERA is 2.42. Montgomery's is 2.16. They've both allowed 4 walks, rather. Here's where the difference maker comes in. Eovaldi has 28 strikeouts this postseason, and Montgomery has 17. That's a huge difference.
So this is the thing, though, is that these two dudes are like it right now. Yep. As far as productive pitching, like, they got the 4 wins they needed out of the Astros from those two guys.
Yes.
That's kind of the problem. They might, I don't know. Well, I mean, it can work out for them, right? Because if you have those guys, both those guys pitch twice, you've got your 4 wins right there. But the problem is Leclerc, he had a huge lead to work with in game 7, and it was looking a little dicey.
Got shaky. Yeah.
He was having a hard time getting out of that inning despite the huge cushion. And maybe it was because of the huge cushion, right? Maybe it was one of those things where you get a little bit complacent. Allow a home run to Jose Altuve, walk a guy. Then you're like, but he also gave up that 3-run home run to Altuve in, what was that, game 5?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. They had game 5 wrapped up and he got cute. I think I talked about this before with the, with the pinch hitter who's hitting 152. And then game 6, he comes after him and strikes him out.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been game over if he'd done that in game 5. Singleton?
Singleton. I think it was Singleton.
Yeah. Like, Leclerc, I feel like, has a tendency to get cute with guys he shouldn't. He just needs to go after them. And it could end up being a problem for them against the Diamondbacks again.
Here's the thing, though, about the pitching is that Heaney and Dunning combine, if you do the kind of a bullpen day on one of those days, you throw those two guys back to back, and 9 times out of 10 you're going to end up with something very close to Montgomery,
right? Yeah, with the two of those guys together.
If you stack them,
I think you will.
And then it's gonna be tough.
Can we talk about Aroldis Chapman for just a minute, though?
We have to.
Like,
it's too good.
It's mind-boggling the fall that guy has taken, that you can't put him into a high leverage situation and count on him anymore. You can put him in the 8th, in the 7th or the 8th inning and be like, just please, just hold the lead.
Just be cool, bro.
And it might happen. Cool. Yeah, exactly. Be cool, man.
Yeah. Be cool. Well, the problem is his command is down.
Right.
His velocity is still
at, 100. He hit Chaz McCormick with 104 in the back of the leg.
Exactly.
I'm surprised that dude could walk.
No, seriously. He probably can't right now. But if you can't hit your spots, it doesn't matter. And isn't it, wasn't it David Cone that said some of the best things you can do is take a little off of it and make your spots? So
that's how Greg Maddux made his money.
Maddux, that's exactly how he did it. So really interesting. Okay, let's get into the schedule. The World Series schedule starts tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
All games are 8 p.m. Eastern. All games.
Oh, they all are. Eastern
on Fox. Yep.
Fabulous. Yeah, games 1 and 2 will be in Arlington. That's Friday and Saturday, the 27th and 28th. There will be a travel day on the 29th in between where they will move to Phoenix. And at Chase Field, you'll see games 3, 4, and 5 if necessary. That'll be 30, 31, and November 1st, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then Thursday, they will travel back to Arlington should that be necessary for games 6 and maybe 7. That will be Friday and Saturday, the 3rd and the 4th of November. Brad, who you got after all of that info?
Who do I got?
Yeah.
I'll tell you who I got. I got my Diamondbacks, baby.
Oh!
I didn't think they would make it past the Dodgers. They shocked me. I didn't think they would make it past the Phillies. They stunned me. I'm not falling off. I'm not going to let them fool me a third time, Brig. I'm going for the Diamondbacks. If JT Realmuto couldn't stop this team from running, Jonah Heim doesn't stand a chance. And I've been talking about Jonah Heim all season. I like that dude, but he's no JT Realmuto, right? So
he's just not. That's true.
Yeah, and I think when it comes down to the pitching matchups, I think the D-backs are going to win the pitching matchup. They're going to win the defensive matchup, and it's going to come down to making things happen on the base paths, and they're way better at it.
They are.
So I'm going to say D-backs in 6.
In 6. I want desperately for there to be 7 games. That's
there to be 7 games.
I just want there to be 7 games. But I'm with you. I think as you were talking, I was realizing this is exactly how I feel. Fool me once, strike one.
Right.
But fool me twice, strike three. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to go with the answer backs on this one. I think their defensive capabilities are going to run the show. I think that they have more in it. They have more fight somehow on those intangibles and that sort of some of that mojo. But I do think they're going to have a problem in at least one of the games in Arlington. And that's I don't know if they'll have a problem in both, but they could. But I think once they get back to Chase, they'll be okay. I just need them to win one game in Arlington.
Yeah, and that's, I think, all they're going to shoot for is shoot for one game in Arlington. If they can get it, they've got the job done there. But even then, they lost both games in Philly, and it looked like it was over.
Right.
Like, they looked done.
Totally. So, now I'm like, I believe.
And this is the thing, is that the Rangers didn't even win a home game last series.
No, I know.
So, who's to say? But no, I think the D-backs are going to be the ones, they're going to get it done. But Brig, I think it's funny though, because you are like good to go either way. Because you can say the D-backs win now, and if they win, you've got it made. But at the other hand, because you're the way you were talking them up in the preseason, if they win, you'd be like, I told you guys.
Yeah.
You can you can already be smug about it. We'll let you.
Yeah. Thank you. That is my MO anyway. Just be smug about it. So. I'm glad. See, do you see this right here? I'm going to be smug about it. Okay. You are.
And we'll allow it.
Have a leg to stand on this time.
So, Brig, who's your MVP in the series? If the D-backs win it, who's your MVP?
Adley Rutschman. Yeah, that's easy. No. Just phoning it in, okay? If the D-backs win, I'm going to give it to my brain just threw me a hot take. Because the automatic answer is Corbin Carroll. But I think you could pin it on Gabby Moreno, Ketel Marte, or my actual pick is going to be Brandon Pfaadt.
Oh, you think he's going to be the dude?
Okay. Yeah, that's my hot take.
So I'm going to give it to Corbin Carroll.
Okay.
I think he's going to be the guy. He's heating up.
Oh, man.
He really had kind of a rough go games 1 through 6, but he came into game 7 ready to go. in the NLCS, and I think he's going to come into the World Series ready to go, and he's going to be absolutely on fire, hitting. I think he's going to get a couple home runs. He's going to knock some singles, steal some bases, make some things happen in the outfield. Yeah. I think it's going to be Corbin Carroll.
You know who I want it to be, though, like deep down?
Who's that?
I so bad want it to be Evan Longoria.
That'd be amazing. You know who I so badly want it to be?
Who?
Paul Sewald.
Oh, yeah, of course you would. Yeah.
I would love it if Paul Sewald
got it. Yeah, yeah.
That's another reason I'm cheering for the D-backs. I want Sewald to get a ring.
Makes sense.
So who?
So if it's the Rangers, who's your MVP?
If it's the Rangers, I'm going to go Corey Seager. It's going to have to be him. He's the one who got him to the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing to me how many former Yankees are on the Rangers squad. Like it's astonishing.
How many are there?
Nate Eovaldi,
right.
Jordan Montgomery, Aroldis Chapman. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm thinking just off the top of my head. I've got a list here somewhere. Andrew Heaney. He's also
he was terrible anyway. In New York too.
Yeah, real bad.
He was real bad. Yeah. So Brig, I'm curious, who forgets to show up? Because a few years ago, it was Manny Machado was the only Dodger who remembered to show up.
He was,
right?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
2018. So who's the guy who forgets to show up and ends up being a problem?
That's a fun question. I'm going to say Evan Carter.
Evan Carter forgets?
He's going to forget to show up. And the other guy that's going to forget to show up is, I don't know.
So this is what I have. I have Marcus Semien forgetting to show up for the Rangers, and that's going to be a problem. Yeah. I think he forgot that there was a season in August, to be honest with you. Because he took a
siesta. Now he's back.
He took a siesta. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's going to forget to show up. And then for the D-backs have a problem with anybody. I'm going to say it's going to be Christian Walker offensively. He'll be fine defensively because he's on autopilot defensively. He's so good, right?
He is.
But offensively, I feel like if he doesn't show up offensively, there could be a little bit of a problem. But there are enough guys in that lineup who have been making an impact that it will still be fine. Because this was the thing. This was one thing that I was noticing towards the end of the NLCS. Is that, and Paul Sewald said the quiet thing out loud, right? He said, you worry about Schwarber, you worry about Harper, but you keep going down that line of Bohm and Stott are automatic outs. And granted, they showed up to game 7 because he said that, but they're the only guys who showed up to game 7.
It's true.
After that, right?
Yeah.
But the D-backs lineup ended up being way deeper.
Yeah.
As that series got deep.
It's true.
And so this D-backs lineup is a problem top to bottom.
Yeah,
if you have a guy like Christian Walker doesn't show up, he hits like towards the heart of the order. You can kind of hide that a little bit, right? But Marcus Semien, where he's hitting at the top of the order, that could be a problem for them.
Yeah, you can't hide that. Yeah, you're right. That's a great question.
Anywho,
that's a really.
I think like there's always somebody who forgets to show up. Right? It's like, oh, the World Series. That's today.
Yeah, oh no. Taylor Duke is in the house, by the way. He's watching. He says he's sorry he's late, but he's very excited about the D-backs.
He's got Taylor, the D-backs in 5.
He's got them in 5. That's a pretty hot take, actually, but I like it. 22 years for this. Taylor, are you going to find a way to make it to the World Series, or are you going to watch it from home? Neither are problematic answers, by the way, but it has been a long time coming, and you have been sticking with them. You and Brock have been sticking with them the whole time. And
pretty lean year.
Yeah, it's been lean. They lost 110 games 2 years ago.
I know. Yeah.
I don't
know. And last year, they lost 45 in a row at one point, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The turnaround, though, from 2021 to 2023 is historic.
The turnaround from 2022 to 2023 has been insane.
It's true.
Like, we thought this was going to be a 500 team this year because of who they were last year. And we're like, oh, they're better this year.
Yeah.
Right. But they cut the dead weight partway through the season. They trimmed some fat and they said, these are our holes. This is what we need to deal with. Yeah. They fixed the problem. They brought in Seawald, and they said, you know what? We can afford to get rid of Josh Rojas. We can afford to get rid of Dom Canzone. So they did. And
that's true.
It's worked out for him.
Dude, was I the only one worried when Canzone left? I was like, what?
I was too busy celebrating the Mariners got to be worried about what was going on down the street. I had just seen him in person. So I was like, yeah.
His first, like, he's played for the D-backs for like 3 hours, right? And everybody was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And then they moved him, and we were like, why? What are you doing? Why?
Yeah, they're deep.
And now they're,
we got a deep outfield.
The World Series. Yeah, it's amazing.
And you know what? A guy who we haven't talked about is Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
That hair, though.
Oh, there's a reason they call him La Pena. He quietly had a good series, right? Like, made a difference on defense, which is not something we expect out of him. We expect the bat. He had a pretty good series out in left field. Saved a couple runs. And then when he needed to, he got hits.
Yeah, he did.
He could very well be another X factor in this series, just quiet offensively, getting his job done.
Yeah. You know, I think it's cool about Gurriel Jr. is that he's 30, right? Which puts him up on the older side of things in the game. Yeah. And you can tell that he has settled down. His maturity levels come through. Everything is working and he's in his favor right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. I love it so much.
Too. Yep. Yeah. I love it. I think he's embraced the role. And it's so funny too, that when they traded for Dalton Varsho, I don't care who you send. I'm just pumped to have Varsho, and then they send him. And I bet he was, like, first off, a little bit embarrassed, but also probably a little bit disappointed, thinking that, man, this is the piece that we need in Toronto to get over the top. And as it turns out, Toronto was kind of a mess for a lot of the year and really flamed out there at the end. And then now here he is in the World Series. Good for him.
I totally agree.
But baseball, I'm very excited.
Tell us what you think. Put them in the comments section. Let us know who you got. How many games is it going to take? Who's your MVP for the World Series? And who do you think forgets to show up? Those are the three questions that we want to know going into tomorrow night's game, 8 p.m. on Fox. It's that time of year, Brad. It's the World Series. I'm so excited.